Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival. Visit catskill-cuisine.com to learn more and buy tickets.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. I am so excited to be sitting down with Catherine Lewin, the founder of the store Big Night and the author of the upcoming cookbook Big Night, all about dinners, parties, and dinner parties. I love this book. It was so much fun to read about hosting and to talk with Catherine about her opening of her store, how you don't need to be perfect in throwing a dinner party, and what she puts on her playlist for a night of having friends over. And then we head into the archives for the New York rocker band No Ice, deemed one of the hardest working bands of 2016 and 2017 by Oh My Rockness. They play with the likes of Television and Black Lips, and they were stopping by to play acoustic songs from their latest album, Come On Feel the No Ice. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on HRN.
Very well, you must not be
Catherine, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I know you got stores. I know you're promoting a cookbook, so I appreciate you taking the time to sit down and chat with me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited too because, you know, every year there's more and more cookbooks, and I've seen a lot, and I've seen them come out of TV shows, podcasts, newsletters, but I don't think I've ever read one that started as a physical store. Did you ever dream that when you opened the doors to Big Night that you would one day be writing a cook about it?
If I dreamed it, it was subconscious.
Sure.
I couldn't have imagined that a cookbook would come out of a retail store.
Yeah. I mean, you're curating the store. The book feels equally curated, and it's like sort of a no-brainer in some ways. And I'm surprised I haven't seen more stores turned into books.
You know, I've looked for examples too, because what I wanted to make sure this book was something that actually brought value to people.
Sure.
And not something that just felt like an advertisement for Big Night and the store.
That's what Instagram is for.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need a cookbook for that.
No.
And I really couldn't find any examples of stores turned into books, and it makes me feel, you know, even more grateful for the opportunity to kind of like bring to life what the store is all about on the page and really tell the story.
Yeah. I want to get into the story, but I want to go back a bit because I host as well. My wife does as well, which I thought was a common thing that people just opened their doors because that's what my parents did. Like you just mm-hmm. have people over and it's an endless party and people come to your house for holidays. That is not the case with everyone. Can I assume that your parents or you grew up in a house with a lot of hosting?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up mostly in Austin, Texas, where
Shout out, where
hosting was kind of just throwing open the door and mm-hmm. saying, y'all come over. You know, we're going to put a couple things on the grill. Can you bring something? And it was very laid back and easy and natural. And I think that is the perspective that I come to hosting with. Mm. But you're right. So many people didn't grow up in places or in households where like people came over and ate together.
Yeah. I mean, Thanksgiving was at our house. Jewish holidays were at our house. You know, there was always an extra seat at the table, and it just trickles down, which, you know, isn't always a natural fit for people. I think people today, especially in New York, it's like we're eating out, having people over. It's sort of a hassle.
Yeah.
Especially, like, yeah, pre-COVID times too.
So I think you're right. I think in New York, the idea of having people over, you know, people are like, well, I have to do something that feels, you know, just as exciting or special as all of us going to a restaurant, because I feel mm-hmm. like that's the fault. And it really trips people up and they feel, you know, intimidated. And that's something that I had an inkling was true when I was sort of concepting the store, but as soon as we opened the doors and I started talking to people, now, keep in mind, this was in 2021. Finally, when people were first starting to feel safe, you know, gathering. Sure. A lot of people hosted in the past, but just did not know how, they didn't remember. Right. A lot of people had never hosted before, but were like, oh my God, it's safe to have people in my house around food. Like, let's do this. And I really got to be a part of conversations with people, kind of learning or relearning. Not just how, but what it feels like to really have people over, enjoy it, and make, you know, even take out pizza and a homemade salad feel like a big night.
Yeah, because it's interesting because the idea that you have become this expert hoster, have a story about it, especially when your previous career was editorial director of The Infatuation, which is like pretty much you're eating out all the time, and that's your rhythm of your life, and you fall into that restaurant and things like that, which I know it's, you know, went away when you got into lockdown and the pandemic. I would think that when the world reopened, you'd be like, get me back inside a restaurant, not like get more people inside my house.
I was. I mean, I remember so specifically, I have a snapshot image in my mind of the first time I got to like eat at the bar at a restaurant, which is always my favorite place to eat.
Same.
At the bar. And I went to Le Crocodile in Williamsburg and I had a martini and chicken and fries. And I remember feeling like ecstatic, so much so that we took a photo with a stranger next to us who was also like on the verge of tears because she was so happy to be there eating out. I look at that photo often. I think, you know, just because you love going to restaurants doesn't mean that you also can't love, you know, recreating that like sparkly magic at home. Mm. And that's what I feel really strongly about is like you lose the sparkly magic when you're so hung up on like, okay, we're all going to sit and I have to serve X many courses. And what if it's not all hot? And I don't know really like how to buy wine or drink wine and like what kind of wine do people like. People get so caught up in like all of the logistics and stuff that intimidates them. And then they lose that feeling of like warm, fuzzy feelings when at the end of the day, you just have people you love in your home, stretching out and enjoying themselves over food.
Yes. I mean, what do you love at your core about hosting though? Because someone once told me that it's how I show my love to other people, which I never thought about it that way. But what is it for you that you've dedicated now your life to it and wanting to show other people how to do it as well?
I think my love language is quality time.
Mm.
And for as much as I love restaurants, like deeply, I think the best quality time with groups over two or three is not in a restaurant. It's at home.
100%.
And if I want to hang with 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 friends, you know, I love restaurants, but I don't want us all to be like piled around a long table trying to figure out what we're ordering, splitting a check at the end of the night. It's just like, it's not the best way to really kind of like commune with people. But swinging open your door, even if you don't have time to cook, you're just ordering pizzas and you're going to pour a couple bottles of wine and sitting on your floor all around looking at each other, like that to me is so much more enjoyable than pretty much anywhere else you could be with that number of people.
Yeah, I mean, there's also this even in the best restaurants where you know the owners, you're a regular, there is a rigidness of like, I'm sitting in the seat, there's no flow of where I can get up and talk around because there's other people around, and you don't want to be the, you definitely don't want to be the person like, I know the owner, which is an awful thing to say. And on top of that, I'm standing in the way of the servers. And oh, so sometimes you only get to speak to one or two people. But I think you hit on it. Like, there is this intimidation, though, of being like, I'm going to open up my doors and bring people in. But sometimes it's just taking about those baby steps and maybe having people over for pizza or just cocktails or just, like, anything.
Like a drink before dinner. That's always a nice place to start is like, okay, we have this res for eight of us. Does everyone want to come over and have a couple cheeses and some spritzes before we head out? Like that is like, and what it, that does is sets your night up after you've all had a chance to connect. As you say, it's really hard to mix and mingle in a restaurant, but like that connection of like, we can be talking to multiple people at once or like walking around a room. Like, have you tried this cheese? Like even just that moment before dinner, I feel like, you know, kind of sets you on a path to feeling more connected to the people around you.
Yeah. So I want to go back a little bit again of that. You love going back to restaurants. You're still writing an infatuation, but you have this inkling about hosting. And it's not like, oh, I'm going to host more. It's like, I'm going to open up a store. And I've talked to enough people that opening up a store is insane. It's a huge lift, especially when you're opening up, when you're like people, I don't want to say they're still wiping down everything they brought home, but like the idea of going to stores are like one at a time.
Totally.
What did you know about opening up shops? What did you know about opening up stores? How did you even take that leap?
I knew almost nothing.
Fantastic.
So I had the inkling for the idea in 2020 peak lockdown. I'm driving across the country. I think it was middle of nowhere, Nebraska. And I think I'm driving to a family gathering. I can't really remember why we were driving, you know, across the Midwest and not flying, but COVID, something weird. And I'm just thinking about all these holiday gatherings. And I'm thinking about the way that I've been watching people on my Instagram feed cooking more than ever before. Like, I've been watching people cook, like grow scallions, make sourdough, like do these like project meals because we have nothing to do. But thinking about how these holiday gatherings, people who were lucky enough to be able to have them, that was really the first time we were all seeing each other around a table, around food again.
Yeah, and I thought,
when we can gather, you know, in the form of dinner parties or just take out pizza at home together, when it's not an occasion, like when it's a Friday night, that's going to feel really special and really different. And I want to remember how to do that. And I think other people might want some help remembering how to do it too. And that's when the spark came. So that was December of 2020. And at that time, I was still very much employed at the infatuation and busy and still loving that job. And I did until my last day, but that idea was kind of like cooking in the background. And I kind of put it away. And then a few months later, I was on a walk in my neighborhood and I looked up probably from my phone and found myself in front of this little shop with floor to ceiling windows on, you know, the best shopping street in my neighborhood. And it just hit me different. I had probably passed so many other times, but somehow the broker sign in the window, like it just screamed at me. And I thought, why is it still sitting vacant? Is this my store? Like I just had this weird, it's like, it feels like a lightning bolt feeling. And I called the broker, like called the number on the window. I've never spoken to a commercial real estate broker. And he just started like spamming me with information that I didn't understand. And I was like, sure, totally. Yeah, that all makes sense. Pretending. Can I tour it? And he was like, sure, how about today? And that set into motion the whole thing. And then as the universe does, so many different things lined up along the way of negotiating that lease to make it just feel like this is an actually really special opportunity and can't miss it. So that was in March of 21. We negotiated the lease until we signed it June 6th. I put in my notice at the infatuation June 7th. I stayed for 4 weeks to make sure they were in a good spot. So my last day was July 9th. And then I opened the store on August 28th. So the whole thing was extremely a compressed timeline.
Do you remember those initial customers? Did they, had they been waiting for something like this as well?
Of course I remember. I remember the first day thinking, like, is anyone going to show up? And we had a line down the block within, you know, 15 minutes of opening. And people, you know what it was? People were just so excited that something new for the neighborhood was opening in the neighborhood. And this was in that moment of, like, so many closures, restaurants and otherwise. And a lot of people that first day said to me, like, so you've opened a brick and mortar store in COVID. Where's the online store? Like, where's the virtual component of this? Like, you can't be serious that you just open a brick and mortar store. And I said, no, that is what it is. There is
that's
no,
what it is.
That's the whole game. A lot of people were like, what is this? Like, part of some, like, what brand?
Oh yeah. What weekend pop-up experiential moment is this?
What secret marketing paid advertisement is this? And my answer was no, we're actually just a shop. That is the concept. And people were really excited to have that and excited by the idea of a store that was celebrating coming together, I think.
Amazing. All right, let's take a quick break because I want to get into the book, the idea of Big Night, and then definitely want to talk about the playlists that you put together for each event that you throw. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on HRN. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with Catherine Lewin, owner of Big Night and author of Big Night, the book, which I loved and felt like it was speaking to me and giving me a little bit of a cheat code to make my hosting nights even bigger. I think what really spoke to me about it is how you lead with saying that you were an introvert, which in many ways I find that I can be as well, especially at parties that I've helped plan and invited people over to, which is why you can sometimes just like find me in the kitchen at parties or out by the pizza grill. Cause it just means like we're all in the same spot together, but like I don't have to interact with you. How do you square that circle or circle that square of being an introvert and revolving your whole life around hosting?
And also revolving my whole life around stores where we meet strangers and people every second of every day. Here's the thing. I love being around people all the time. I just sometimes need a little private moment to not talk, to just like be in my own thoughts, which it sounds like you do too.
Yeah.
And I think, again, people think of hosting and they think of some person like jazz handsing in the middle of the living room, like literally entertaining people. And that is just not me. I'm like, you know, gossiping in the corner with my friends, cooking something, changing the music, making sure everybody's drinks are filled. But you also might find me literally laying in the dark in my bedroom when I need a moment alone for a few minutes of the party, which is what I like to call a social nap. And
which I absolutely love.
I mean, the thing is, okay, there is nothing cozier than laying in your bed alone and like listening to all of your friends have great conversations and laughing. And you're thinking to yourself, like, I'm in an environment for that. And I can really enjoy it just sitting here, taking a moment for me while I listen to them. It's one of my favorite moments of any party.
Yeah, I mean, it really is just like, I just need a beat. I'm so happy that you're here. All the dishes are done. I just like need to disappear for 5 or 10 minutes.
Exactly.
And recharge up.
You get so, it.
This idea of anything or any night can be a big night is also really great, because where people I find get tripped up in hosting is they're like, okay, I'm throwing a holiday party, or it's the Memorial Day weekend thing, or it's a birthday. And the pressure of trying to do, and forgive my business meet, an editorial tent pole party.
Oh, wow. What a good way of putting that.
Just adds all this pressure. And it's just like, no, pick a Tuesday. Don't even, you know, don't even have to waste a weekend on it. But how do you apply this idea, this concept of a big night to any night?
I think there are easy levers to pull when it is just a Tuesday night and you got off work at 7 o'clock and you told 6 people to come over and you literally haven't grocery shopped, you can still find a lever to pull to make that gathering feel special. Even if you just did order pizza, that's the meal, we're having pizza. Okay, but what you're gonna do is stop at the wine store and spend 15 minutes chatting with the staff there to find out like what actually are the best pizza wines. And then you're home and you're going to share those with friends and like share what you learned in the store. You're going to pour them in your most fun or nicest glasses. You know, if you have 10 minutes, maybe you can pull together a salad with like one special ingredient. You know, maybe you pick up burrata. And you're like, great, there's going to be a burrata salad. And suddenly things start to feel different than just any old Tuesday night. They start to feel, you know, festive and fun. And, you know, you gave yourself and your friends that 20 minutes between the wine store and the burrata store to get those things. And that, you can feel that effort. And like that specialness comes from just taking a beat to make things feel not your average Tuesday night.
Yeah, I think getting away from this idea of perfect, which I've seen even worse as social media become just like the big communicator. I get it, because people want to like do the photo, and that's sometimes why they throw it, which is a whole other conversation.
Can we have a whole episode about this? I can't with the perfect tablescaping social media. Like that is the that's like the killer of an actually fun dinner party, when you're so worried about exactly how your table looks and whether everything matches and if you've gotten the shot. Here's the thing. Most of my dinner parties, I don't even remember to keep my phone on me and I don't photograph anything. And honestly, like, that's how you know it was a good party.
Yeah. I mean, when I look back, it's just like, oh, I set my camera out, or there's nothing on it. Or maybe there's that one overhead rushed shot of everything laid out before anyone comes over. And then you look back, you're like, that's a terrible photo. 100%. Just so terrible. I mean, I think sometimes every time I have a dinner party, I go like, remember that last time when you promised to get better serving bowls and more, not matching, but like matchy stuff, but no one gives a shit. No one cares. They're like, oh, the potatoes were roasted perfectly, but wrong serving bowl or things like that.
Oh, but you didn't have rosemary in them. Like, oh, you forgot that one ingredient. Oh yeah. No, those potatoes were not as good as they could have been. Like, yeah. No one knows.
I mean, Julia Child said it years ago. No one knows. Except for, and I would say this, when I do dinner parties now, and what I like about what you have in this is that, like, there's a flow to the evening. And very rarely is it, like, everyone sitting around the table at once. And here's the thing. Like, what I love about dinner parties is the grazing. And I think the book has a lot of really good grazing nibble recipes. Totally. And like people like standing and coming in and like making a plate. So how do you suggest people to start getting their own flow? Because this is not a manual. It's a guide.
Yes.
But make it personal.
Do you know what makes people feel really taken care of? It's when you have a plan for them. And even if that plan is not, you know, and at this time we will all sit down and have this perfectly warm chicken dish that I just pulled out of the oven. No, the plan is like, okay, I've put out some cheeses and olives and nuts, and we suddenly have like a gorge aperitif hour. And what we're having here is a spritz bar. Here are your three choices of, you know, how you're going to build your spritz with what kind of amari or aperitif. And that feeling of like, whoa, someone has thought about like this, this starter moment of the dinner party. And then, you know, maybe you're still finishing up whatever it is you're cooking on the stove. And when you're finished, you're like, all right, for this dish, I'm thinking about how we should all be drinking, you know, this French red wine that I picked up to go with this chicken. There's not really space on the table right now. Everyone grab a plate. Can you serve yourself? Let's make sure we get the sauce out of the, you know, fridge to go with. It's more about like, this isn't like the sweetest way of putting it, but it's more about like gently like traffic directing, saying like, sure. I've thought about this next step. I want to pour you a glass of this. You don't have to think about anything. And I think that like I have thought ahead of like how we're going to enjoy each of these moments. Don't worry about it. I've gotcha. Like grab a glass. Let me pour you this. Like that goes such a long way in directing the flow. Is just like, I have thought about how I want you to enjoy this. Now let me treat you to this experience.
Yeah, it's like, I've set you up. Here's a little cheeky chunk of cheese, some chilled white wine. Yeah, I've set you up. And I think, I don't know. I think people just get in their heads and they want to make one dish from that they love from their moms, but they don't know what to pair it with. You're also not too particular in the book about like you have gourmet sabzi, and then you have other regional dishes within the same menu. You know, what do people look for when they're pairing dishes and drinks and things like that?
I think this question really trips people up. And my best advice is pick one cornerstone dish that you want to serve. Like gourmet sabzi, an amazing Iranian stew. Like if that's your cornerstone dish, that is so much effort. And the outcome is so potent and amazing. Like let that be your focus. And then to round things out, think to yourself, like what are easy ways to start this night and round out this night? You know, like maybe like as a side, instead of a whole composed salad, it's like beautiful, fresh veg with a dip that people can be like snacking on or put on the side of their plate. Like I think so often people think about pairings in terms of like, how will these foods taste together? And does it make sense thematically? When really what they should be thinking is, can I actually pull this stuff off together? Is this going to be like misery for me? Or can I actually enjoy my own party? Like, what would allow me, in terms of rounding out this menu, to be able to enjoy myself here? Like, that to me is the most important element in thinking about how to pair things together.
Let me ask you this. You've hosted so many dinner parties. Do you remember painful moments? Because I think it would really help people just to be like, I went down in flames, or this was not a good one, just to show that even though you are literally written the book on it, you're human too.
100%. I say this as a person who cannot edit herself. I cannot pare things down. Like, I am more is more. I don't know when to say no. So this has really taken a lot of honest self-talk about like what is misery and like what is actually going to be doable and enjoyable. One time I hosted a steakhouse night.
Sure.
And already that conceit is hard because a home is not a steakhouse. And there's a reason why going to steakhouses is the ultimate luxury, because when else can you have all these foods together? But I'm like,
How many sides?
Exactly. I say, okay, we're going to have the steaks.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we're also going to start with a wedge salad. Oh, fine. I can prep most of that in advance. Fine.
Uh-huh.
But then I said, in addition to creamed spinach,
okay,
I'm going to attempt both fries and onion rings to go with your steaks.
Once you start frying at home, why?
Honestly, this is my takeaway from that party. If you're going to make onion rings, that should just be the whole party. It's onion rings and beer, and it is delicious. And like, you eat the onion rings until you're not hungry anymore. Like, fresh onion rings are a revelation. We should all have them. But like, do not ever do that on the side of anything. Like, that's it. That's the whole meal.
And the thing is that like, you can get really good pre-made onion rings.
And why?
Well, you talk about that because in the leg of lamb recipe, you talk about that it needs to be boneless, butterflied, tressed. You know what I mean? Like, you can go get it. And you're like, if that already stresses you out, call your butcher. I think there is a thing now where there are enough stores that are local or places where you can go and get pre-made to help elevate you, so you can sort of pick and choose what you're going to focus on.
Totally. And to be unafraid to go the easier route. Like, there's another recipe in the book that is Le Grand Shrimp Salad. And this is like my dream. I'm serving lunch for like the most important person or persons in my life.
Mm.
And it's a poached shrimp salad. It's herby, it's mayo-y, it's delicious. If you don't feel like poaching shrimp for a shrimp salad, guess what? You can find pre-cooked shrimp in any grocery store, and most of them will be perfectly fine, and you're covering it in a mayo-y, herby, spicy sauce.
Yeah.
Like, cut the corner. Like, why are you – you're not getting any awards for poaching your own shrimp unless that is truly your journey, and in that case, I salute you. But it's all about just thinking, like, how can I make this easier for myself?
You know – there is an ease, but then there is something also about that effort, which I really learned a couple of years ago. We were with another family that had kids, and we were on vacation in Italy. And it was really the first time like we hosted in this sense of the book and what you're doing. And it was just us. It was just like this family and another family in a house in a different country, going to the markets, making that effort, things like that. Mm-hmm. And it was a revelation, because most of the time when I'm on the road, it's just like, where are we eating out? What are we doing? But to like sort of cook for yourself or maybe just another friend was really special. And I will remember those meals more than maybe some of the places we ate. And you talk about that in your book about big nights on vacation.
Vacation, big nights. I feel this is a very passionate topic for me. I think cooking on vacation is so underrated.
100%.
If you make it pleasant for yourself.
Yes.
As you're saying, like, what an experience to like go to the market, find the stuff that looks really good that you might not find, you know, wherever you live. And, you know, on vacation, like, there's just extra time to put care and energy and love into things. And so it doesn't feel like this like harried, like rushed, like I had to go to three different stores to buy these things. It's like, I got to go to three different stores to like hunt down.
I went
like
to three markets. Yeah.
Blossoms. And then I spent an afternoon just like luxuriously making this for myself and others. I think vacation big nights are a true luxury to be had. And I think the key to them is just planning ahead a little, making sure you're like, you carved out the nights on the vacation that like, you know what, I'm treating myself and others versus like, you know what, I'm letting others treat me.
And you know how the kitchen works, because nothing is worse than being like, I couldn't figure out the stove, or like we were missing a can opener. Like,
yes.
There's a hardware. Yeah.
100%. Explore the kitchen, figure out what your bounds are. But I also think that some of the most fun meals and some of my most creative meals happen within the confines of something like, okay, this kitchen has one burner and
sure.
one cookie sheet and like one pan. And then you have to think like, cool, those are my parameters, and I'm not going to cook some crazy spread that would involve every pan in my kitchen at home. I'm going to focus on what I really want to make in this exact moment of being on vacation.
Yeah. Although I always find that when I cook on vacation, because I'm not as familiar with stuff, I like use too many pots and pans.
Of course.
Now, listen, before we go, I feel like you've set us up for recipes, how not to get stressed out over things not matching, being gentler on yourself. But I'd love to hear about how you set the vibe with music, because that's usually the first thing that people experience when they walk in is what's playing on the stereo. Do you have just like a one go-to dinner party playlist, or do you go super specific and you're like, okay, it's like Rat Pack for the steak night. It's, you know, like more of folk music for the veg party, you know?
Oh, I was just listening to your episode with Jess, and I would love to hear her folk music health nut party sound like.
I'm sure it is Ben and all of them playing some incredible music.
Of course, live.
Naturally. Or maybe it's Benny just laying down a cool set.
Of course. First of all, I'm going to have to ask the question back to you at the end of this, because I want to know what your dinner party playlist is. Mine is, in fact, a master compilation. I think it's somewhere around like 24 hours of music. That's like my base playlist. And then, as you say, if there is a theme of the night, which normally there isn't, but like if it's steakhouse night or if it's red sauce night, you got to sprinkle in those Louis little eggs.
Frank Sinatra.
Just a little Easter egg amongst everything else, for sure. You know, I will say our store playlists are my dinner and party playlist.
Oh, well, there you go.
So if you ever want to know what's on my party playlist, just head to the stores, hang out. You'll find out all my favorite music. And I've long thought about putting them somewhere on the internet. So maybe this is my push that I need to do that.
You absolutely should, because people, even I get like in my head about it. You know, I'll start with like a record. Maybe it's like a Roy Orbison thing, something that's like nice and easy.
Yes, good.
Or Thelonious Monk, you know, something like jazz. And then I inevitably just get distracted in the kitchen. And then my wife will put on a playlist. I mean, I hate to admit it, but Smith Radio algorithm type of stuff. I'm focused on the food, which I know that I should also be focused on the music, but it's like,
no, you can't really be in two brains at once. I find that having at least three people who are empowered to take the off, that's really important. It cannot just be on you. So you have like your trusted two confidants who can be like, whatever vibe we are on right now is not it. I got to change it.
Which I'm fine about, because I've just lost track. I'm more into people taking care of the music than helping me in the kitchen.
Oh, 100%.
I'm like, I'm in my mind. I might need you to stir something, but like my internal clocks are going.
Yes.
Like, just leave me alone. That's the introvert part of me.
I'm in my head right now about like when to take this stuff out of the oven. I cannot be thinking about the music.
No.
And that's why, I mean, I also sometimes love to turn on radio. That's one of my favorites. There's an Austin radio station that I just love, and letting someone else DJ fully sometimes is really nice.
It's really nice. It's like, you know what? I don't even care. I'm not even hearing the music. I just need to hear that something's on there. Well, Catherine, congratulations. Let's do this. If people want to visit the store, where can they go?
Come over. We have two locations. We have one, the original is in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And our second location is in the West Village of Manhattan. You can also always shop us 24/7 at www.shopbignight.com.
And the book is out when?
The book is out June 4th, everywhere books are sold. And if you would like to stay up to date on things like upcoming book events, more things happening in store, you should follow us on Instagram at Big Night Shop.
Amazing. Shout out to Skylar for putting this together.
Shout out to Skylar, always.
Always. And we have another song from the archives and then a live performance from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on HRN.
Gather your friends and family at the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival, presented by the Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, and Resorts World Catskills. Mark your calendars for a flavor-packed weekend from May 10th to May 12th. Experience the fusion of phenomenal food and electrifying entertainment. Rub shoulders with your favorite Food Network personalities, including Andrew Zimmern, Michael Simon, Scott Conant, Marcus Samuelson, Jeffrey Zakarian, Anne Burrell, Melba Wilson, and distinguished international chefs by LaBelle Farms. Kick off the festivities with Friday's star-studded golf tournament and evening reception. Saturday heats up with free tastings, thrilling live demos, music, and family activities, culminating with a gourmet dinner hosted by celebrity chefs. And on Sunday, celebrate Mother's Day with a special celebrity-curated brunch. Tickets for this celebration are selling like hotcakes. Visit Catskill-Cuisine.com to grab your pass for this unforgettable weekend in the picturesque Catskills. See you there!
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz, in studio live for the first episode of the season. We have no ice. Welcome.
Yo, what up?
Hi.
You're Sean and Jamie. How you guys doing?
Real good.
Fantastic.
You were the first band for season 10 of the show.
Ooh.
Well, mazel tov.
Thank you.
Snacky Tunes.
Snacky Tunes.
Season 10. Godspeed.
We heard about you from our friends over at Oh My Rockness for being not only 2016, but 2017 hardest working, one of the hardest working bands in New York City. How did you stack on 2016 versus 2017? Harder or less hardworking?
I think that 2016 was like the big one.
That was the big one.
But our place on the list was almost the same. I feel like we played more gigs in 2016 than 2017.
Well, I think there's just so many gigs all around now. It's everyone plays so much. It's great. But
we had a couple like Grimstreaker and Thick who are on here. They nodded out on the list too.
They play a lot.
They do.
Both those groups play a lot. We play with Thick a lot, actually. We probably played like 6 gigs with them or something. I think we have another one in February.
Perfect. Let's go back a little bit. You started in a group, the Brooklyn What, which was 2017 to 2015, and you all met in high school.
I met a few of the guys in high school. I went to Edward Armour High School in Brooklyn.
Any significance behind the high school? Is that one of those, like, magnet performing arts schools?
Yeah, it's a school that started in the 70s with a more loose system of what the kids do and a lot of, like, a lot of art.
What is a loose system of what the kids do?
You get to make your, you get to choose your classes, and they let you hang out in the hallways.
You're like, I want recess five times a day.
Yeah,
recess.
It's supposed to be more like college. Yeah, yeah, they started in the 70s. A bunch of famous people went there. Marissa Tomei, Basquiat for a minute, Adam Yauch from the Beastie Boys, the filmmaker Darren Aronofsky, the rapper Little Mama. Oh, and Joey Badass, young. These rappers are younger than me, and we didn't go to school at the same time, but yeah, some rappers came out of there. And
perfect.
Yeah, there's a lot of music and art.
And how did you meet your bandmates, and, you know, how did you start to put this group together?
Oh, well, this group was, I started writing some other material that I thought was a little sad for the Brooklyn What, because we were, like, more of an anthemic rock band, and I started writing some sad tunes, and Jesse Katz was the drummer of the Brooklyn What, but we recorded as a duo, and then we started playing this other material casually, and Jesse's girlfriend, who's also my best friend, Gwen, she sings harmony, and she started singing with us. And John Apollillo was also in the Brooklyn What, and he just started playing with us. So we just had this other group, and then the Brooklyn What stopped playing a couple years ago. And around that time, Sean joined us. And now we have Jordan Smith and Sam Braverman, and we have a 6 or 7-piece lineup, depending on who's around. So we're playing this huge band. And it's funny, because I wanted to start a band that was simple and not a lot of people to play simple songs.
And also, the songs aren't really sad anymore, if that was your intention. The tone has changed.
Tone has changed.
Could these now be Brooklyn What songs? Have they?
No, it's a different set. I started listening to the Lemonheads a lot and Big Star. More songwriter-y music. Brooklyn What was more punk, and this is, like, a few notches more introspective, I think, and more pop also.
What is it? It's always interesting to hear, you know, what couldn't you get out of your previous band that led you to start writing under a new moniker, even though it wasn't No Ice, but what was it that'd be like, I can't say this through this current project, and I have to make something new?
Well, it's very funny the way the band ended up turning out, but Brooklyn What was, like, a really energetic punk soul kind of band, and people would come and get drunk and party, and I kind of was like, I'm tired of being the party guy.
Isn't that always the way?
But then I ended up being the party guy again, I think. But, like, I didn't mean to. I wanted to be like, I'm a serious songwriter, take me seriously.
you're like, please. He needed a short break from being the party guy, but he's back.
Was the short break, like, 2 months or 2 years?
I don't even know. Probably less.
It was like, I need a week off, okay, guys? Yeah. I'm going to come out with a new moniker and a new identity.
Well, I guess.
Does this mean double the invites? If you're, like, the old party guy and the new party guy?
A lot of invites. I send out lots of invites. I can tell you that. I read this book about the Replacements, and Paul Westerberg, who's, you know, one of the more interesting rock personalities, there was something about him that I felt the same, like, I did the same thing. It was, like, after the Replacements, he, like, wanted people to take him seriously, so he started talking about how influenced he was by Joni Mitchell and John Coltrane, and that is literally exactly what I did at this time in my life.
They went, oh, I see him in a whole new light. You're, like, drinking beer and taking shots in the back. You're like, no, Joni, parking lots, you know, really just it speaks to me.
It's funny to find out you're pretentious and also unoriginal. Yeah.
Oh, wait. Oh, sorry. Just for clarification, you said that and then you read it afterwards.
And then I read it afterwards. Oh, yeah. But I was totally doing the same thing. It's like, what are you listening to now? I'm just like Coltrane, Joni Mitchell. Really, I'm working on some really serious new material. Really different from my old band.
I just love, like, I wonder if they would even be like, really, I'm your reference for, like, slowing down. John Coltrane, you picked a jazz guy to be like, we're taking it mellow. Because those guys don't know how to party or do anything late at night at all. Can we hear a song?
Yeah, absolutely. What do you want to do, Straight to Your Heart?
Sure, sure. Yeah. Okay,
so okay, we're going to prepare. We've got the Casio SK1
perfect.
Filling in for Jesse Katz. Great.
Here we go.
Wait, here, let's see.
Straight to your heart.
What's really great about the band is how all of the other members are doing projects. How do you find time to balance all of it? And let's also talk about some of them. Like, I know a couple of them, founders of magazines, editors, etc.
Yeah, we've got like a very busy group. What we don't do is have band practice.
Oh, that's one way to do it.
That's why we're always on, you know, the hardest working bands, is because the only way that we play is by doing shows. Yeah.
You know, we've had a number of bands who will remain nameless because I don't want to sell them out, have come on here and have had said that's how we do practice. We just get paid for shows. And it's like, that seems unfair to some and fair to the people on stage.
Well, everyone seems to like it, so it's not a big problem.
We actually do practice occasionally.
We do.
It's not done.
We play more gigs than we have band practice. Yeah. Some bands are practicing once a month.
We have band practice.
What's the ratio do you have to be a practicey band to live gigs? Like four times in the practice studio a week, one show a month?
Well, we also, because when we first started playing shows, we practiced a lot. So I think that there was the initial buildup. You know, you put in, it's like,
that's what you put going, the work
yeah,
in.
Yeah, you put the work in. Then
you got to get one set that's good that you're not going to ever have to apologize for. And once you've got that set, and then if you have to change it, then you can kind of be like, all right, everyone do your homework. Mm-hmm. And then you show up and play it. And we're just, the thing is with our group is that there's a lot of us, but the chemistry of the group beats the power of rehearsal. Whereas in the other, you know, that may not always be true, but like, you know, also like there's an ethos, which I really like, and everyone who joins the band has to sort of get down with it, is that like, I think that rock and roll is best performed a little casually, and I think everyone in the band has to be comfortable playing on their feet a little bit and not just... The point is never to just do the same set again like we do. Oh, that was good. Let's do it exactly the same. I don't really like to play like that. And, you know, everyone in the group kind of like rises to the occasion if we have a little curveball or we play something a little different or something like that.
There has to be there's a little bit where you don't know what's going to happen.
I mean, I will say that as you get older and you see bands who are super polished, you have the opportunity to see them maybe 2-3 times, and even their banter in between songs is almost verbatim. It does take a little bit of that magic out of the show.
Yeah, that's a little,
Yeah, rock and roll shouldn't be about going through the motions, and that's just what happens to people when they sort of like past their hump of creativity and they just like play a circuit, and that's just so boring, because to me, like, the show is the most fun part. The show is the best. Like, you want to, everything you're doing, you want to get to that show and you want to get the crowd, and then you, like, people come and they pay $8 or $10 or whatever the fuck to come see you, and like, you really have to like entertain them, and playing doing the same thing over and over again is not how you do that.
So you,
in my opinion,
are you going to perpetually be before your hump of creativity?
Yeah, that you have to raise your bar so you're always behind the hump. You don't want to get ahead of it. That's terrible. It's terrible to be ahead of the hump, and you know it too. Like, you know, you'll meet a musician, they'll be like, well, the record I made in 2010, now that was great. It's like, I know, I don't want to be like that. You know what I mean? Or like, we sounded really good the summer of, you know, this year. It's like, no, you want to like...
So is every show your best show?
No. That is the game you play.
Well, two of your members also do, like I mentioned, literary efforts. One of them does Suffragette City, and the other one does Having a Whiskey Coke.
Yeah, Gwen Gallitzer is the editor of Suffragette City, which is an intersectional feminist zine. And it's a very good-looking magazine, too. It's a zine in ethos.
It does, yeah.
But, and she does events, fundraisers. She publishes other people's zines. It's a really incredible project. As a male, I've done everything I can to help, you know. But it's really a project by women and femme-identifying people that they'd really come together as a community in a very beautiful way. And Jesse... Aside from being
a Casio today,
a Casio keyboard,
yes.
aside from being a nasty drummer, he's a really incredible poet. And some years ago, actually, this event, having a whiskey coke with you, is related to No Ice also, because he started doing an event at Freddy's Bar in Park Slope, which is one of my favorite bars. And if you ever want to go to a bar, you should go there. A literary event followed by music. I'm a writer too. And we started making a zine and having readings, and then we would have music afterwards. But from the first one on, it would always end in a casual performance by me and Jesse and Gwen and whoever else was there. So before the No Ice group actually happened, most of the members of No Ice had participated in a casual set where I would call songs before we play them, tell everyone the chords, take requests from the crowd. We learned a set of Gwen loves to sing doo-wop harmonies. So we learned a set of, like Phil Spector, girl group, Motown-type songs. And we were playing that set before we were doing No Ice material, but in a similar lineup. And that was an impetus, is like playing these like sort of bar band sets. You know?
How did we get together? Casual sets.
Casual sets. But I just want to understand. So you would call the chords on the progressions for the songs for the covers and be like,
yeah, like, hey, sometimes we'd learn them, but whoever was showing up would end up playing. And, you know, it just sort of like, it's not like playing songs, on your feet.
Yeah, it's not like those songs were the most complicated songs.
No. But that's why we started there, yeah. I think.
And now you've evolved.
Yeah, but we can still do the cover set. I mean, me and Sean did a couple sets recently where we just blindly took requests from the crowd as fundraisers. And it was like, well, if we nail it, $10.
Fundraisers for?
We did one for the victims of the hurricane, Puerto Rico. Yeah. We did one at Our Wicked Lady for...
It was a local domestic violence.
Yeah, domestic violence.
Something.
Group. Any cause that's good, we'll do it. But we've done it with No Ice, and we did do a set. And we'll take cover requests from the crowd. And if we nail them, it's $10. And if we suck at it, then it's whatever you want.
I mean, if you suck at them, it should still be $10. $9.
I think so.
Someone's like, you know what? You missed a note. $5 for the...
Well, no, but, no. But the caveat is sometimes they're really bad.
Yeah. Okay. Can we hear another song?
Absolutely.
What are you going to play for us?
Let's play All Night.
Sure.
One night stand.
Yo, man, I gotta fight every night to put my love.
One of the defining things of your introduction to your bands are your music videos, which I love.
Oh, thank you.
They're really great. I love the first one, and maybe you can talk about kind of how they evolved and where they started. But Eat the Heart Summer Version, which is obviously a tribute to Godard, Breathless.
Yeah, Eat This Heart, yeah.
How did you come up with it? Who's the other person starring against you in the video?
Oh, that was my friend Katie Davis, who did some acting, but she had a real Gene Seberg haircut at the time. So she had that look. So that I wanted to. I don't know how I had that. I love Breathless, and I don't know. I like doing, like, I feel like a music video is a good chance to do a homage in a not corny way, since it's a little 2-3 minute movie anyway. I love film. So I wanted to, like, do a little, like, sort of film nerd nod with that. And my friend Saskia, who I know from growing up in Brooklyn, is a great filmmaker. And we'd sort of knock that out. Just two people, you know.
I also feel videos are a good insight into the people around bands, which I think you get with Castle Braid.
Yeah.
Which is filled with so many cameos. Maybe you can talk a little bit about who's in there, how it worked. I mean, it looks like every kind of underground band in Brooklyn kind of makes its way through that video.
Well, that one I directed with my friend Brian Chalamy. We worked on it together. I mean, music videos are a really good way to just, like, show, you know, your crowd and, like, you know, just put them in the video, you know, it's good. So, but yeah, I wrote this narrative because Castle Braid is sort of a narrative song, and then I wrote this video that was, like, not, I don't like when videos are the same as the words, like the story. I don't know, that's boring to me or whatever. But I wrote, like, another story. And then my friend Rose Blanchy, who sings in Prima, who are truly one of the best groups, and you should have them on. She's also just very smart and has a lot of good things to say.
Done.
So I cast her as the star of Castle Braid, and then we had Russell Heimwitz, who's my roommate, and he plays in Chomper and Dream Police and 9 other bands, and a friend Ina, who's in the 94 Knicks. And we had, like, the other band, you know. I decided to have, like in Sgt. Pepper's movie, it's like there's the Bee Gees and there's, like, the evil band and this Aerosmith or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, have a thing like that. So, yeah, we got Russ and Ina and Alex Trippinger to be in her band, to be, like, the opposite band, play opposite No Ice. And then there's a scene with to some yuppies, and then I had Ben Jaffe from Pill as one of the yuppies. Yeah, so there's like there's some very cool people in that video, and Joe Aikman's in the video, who we did a video with. Now he's also a filmmaker, but he plays in Toyzan, another great group that you should have on.
Done.
Got a lot of good recommendations.
I mean, this is episode one of the new season, so the season is wide open.
Nice.
Yeah, we'll talk bands after.
Yeah. There's so many great. You know, we're really lucky. Like. And even on the block, like Sean and I live in the same building, and even on the block we live on, there's like 20 great musicians. We're just like, you know, we're up to our knees in yeah. talent. And
don't you find it? I mean, I always find it funny when people try to tell me that New York is dead for musicians.
Blah blah blah
blah blah blah. And I just want to be like, all the venues that you loved are just gone, and you don't want to go find a new thing. It's what you know is dead.
Right.
But there's all. I mean, I can tell you from booking this show for 10 years, mm-hmm. I've never wanted at any point for a great Brooklyn band or a great New York band.
Yeah,
there's
yeah,
always new, young, amazing talent that's coming through, and it's just consistently blowing me away. So just to hear on your block this 20, all you naysayers, be gone.
Oh yeah, it just, you know, our battle is uphill.
Sure.
You know, because there's so many, you know, it's like everyone wants to come here and take your spot, kind of.
Oh, yeah. You know.
But there's so many, yeah. I mean, like, even, yeah, you know, like, I can't tell you how many times, like, a casual acquaintance, I've, like, checked out their music and be like, oh, fuck, you're really good. You know, like, it happens all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good people around. Very, very good.
Is there still one position that's hard to find? Like, can never find a good drummer. Can never
drummer.
Find a, yeah. Okay.
New York is hard for drummers because no one has room for the drum set, and you don't have a car, and like drummer. Like, I think in other areas, like drummers will just drive around with their drum set and play gigs or whatever. But right. most drummers have 9 bands. The drummers are thinned out. Like everyone wants a drummer.
Maybe you can rent out your Casios for the weekend.
Yeah.
So what's up for 2018 besides getting back on the 2018 hardest working band list?
Oh yeah, we gotta get up a couple notches. Yeah.
You guys,
sounds exhausting.
You guys are back in the studio making some new music?
We've essentially started the process that'll end in a new record, hopefully by the end of this year. And we're talking to labels, and we got a new song. Some of them are coming up in the set. We have a video coming out for We Get High Together from the last record, which we did with Joe Aikman from Toyzan, who's also just an auteur filmmaker. He's very talented. And that should be out pretty soon.
I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
yeah,
and a lot of other stuff too.
Yeah.
We'll be playing plenty of gigs. We'll be, you know, we're not going to let our friends at Oh My Rockness down. We're playing a lot of gigs. Our new material. We actually, the last two songs we played, these are unreleased No Eyes songs that we just sort of have added to our set recently. So that's like a little taste of the new record.
Snacky Tunes exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we want to make sure we have time for one more song.
Right.
Last question: if you could describe your band as either a food or dish, what would it be?
Oh my god.
Well, I think I have to let Jamie decide this,
A food or a dish?
Hmm.
Well, it would have to be something with a lot of elements. So it couldn't be like a one thing. Maybe like a paella. You got a little shrimp. You got some clams. You got a nice,
that makes logical sense, but I'm not feeling it.
We're not a paella.
No.
How about like a bagel schmear?
Oh, okay.
That's right. Like an everything bagel, cream cheese,
right.
lox, capers, a cucumber, an onion. If you're nasty, you know,
which you are. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Where can people find your music?
We're on all the major outlets. We're Bandcamp, No Ice, Bandcamp.com. We're on Spotify, Amazon, iTunes. We'll be performing at Sunnyvale on February 1st, I believe. Is our next gig. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, big shout out. Thanks for everyone tuning in to our new season.
And thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for being on here. What's the name of the last song?
We're going to play our hit. This is The Cemetery.
Great. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week with another live episode of Snacky Tunes.
Rock and roll.
How do you feel about this tempo?
this through, but I can't control my mind when my eyes are looking at you, and I know that this will pass, and nothing ever lasts. I don't know what else I could do.
Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.